Boxes were all filled with gifts, big and small. But sharing pure love is the greatest gift of all. Stay cozy, my people, and have a Boss year.
Get into the holiday spirit with Boss and our ultimate gifting edit. Visit your nearest store or explore our curated selection online at boss.com.
Hello and welcome to an episode of Little Fish, your new weekly audience fact special of No Such Thing as a Fish. This is the sibling show. This is Big Brother's Little Brother. This is...
Bake Off an Extra Slice.
Bake Off an Extra Slice.
Traitors Uncloaked.
God, you know a lot of these.
Yeah.
Well, I work in television. I have to know this stuff.
Antiques Roadshow, The Cheap Shit. So we've got some audience facts that have been sent in by a range of listeners. They're all brilliant. Let's get into it. Does anyone have a fact they'd like to kick off with?
I can do one.
Yeah, go on.
All right. This comes in from Kyla Jemison. And the fact is that the pee tank on the International Space Station has a Blue Sky account to update everyone on how full it is.
So when you say a pee tank?
Yeah.
Tank of wee?
Yeah, so there's a toilet on the ISS. There's a few toilets on the ISS. One in particular.
You don't want to be caught short.
Yeah, and they have been. They have been.
Have they?
Oh, yeah, they've had some international problems as well. When stuff on the ground is going wrong, and let's say one toilet is clogged, maybe the Americans won't allow the Russians to use their toilet or vice versa. They've had
really?
There's a lot of problems. But wow. But they do have a tank that collects the urine.
Yeah.
The urine then gets turned into drinkable water, so mm-hmm. it's reused and so on. And this is not an official account. It's very explicit that it's not affiliated with NASA, but there is an account on Blue Sky called the ISS Piss Tracker. And it's because the data of how full the tanks are available to the public. And it updates all the time.
Well, come on then, how full is the... How full is the pee tank right now?
Right now?
Should we have a game?
Yeah, okay.
Is it percentage?
Yeah, it's percentage.
Okay. I'm going to say 37%.
You're going to say 37%.
I'll go 38%. Play the averages.
Okay. That's a mathematician's answer. That's absolute bullshit. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll change it. 37.1%.
Unbelievable.
Okay, you sure? All right.
Yeah.
As of 6 minutes ago, the last update, it was 38% full.
You're joking.
No.
I said 38.
Yeah, you did.
No, but then you pulled back to 37.1, so you're still ahead of
Andy.
Yeah,
but you can only accept my first answer. And the thing is like, I had a feeling it was 38. And when Andy said 37, I thought, oh gosh, he's going to get really close. But I know it's 38, so I'm just going to go for 38. Because you thought I went for 38 because it's one more than 37. But
absolutely.
I had an inkling.
And when you said just play the averages, that was just your code for I know it. I just know it.
Amazing.
Are you serious? James got it bang on.
He got it bang on.
That's so annoying.
If we'd done it 22 minutes ago, it was 36% full. And
I would have got it.
You would have got it. But yeah. So,
we've got to start these shows on time. I'm sorry. I'm really annoyed.
I was looking into just urine in space and how it works in the International Space Station and general shuttles and so on. And there was a mission in 1984 where something went wrong with the exit point of where the urine gets let out into space. It froze up at the end. There was a giant icicle.
Oh.
And they were really worried because they thought that if it loosens up, it might crack the heat shields as we're going back down. They almost did a spacewalk to sort of chisel it off. But in the end, they had a robot arm that came and knocked it off and knocked it away.
Wow.
It also meant that once they'd got rid of it, the toilet was now out of order. So for 6 days, they had to pee into plastic bags. And also in space, really hard to pee because of the microgravity, right? So you've got to be very careful. So how do you think you do it? You've got the bag.
Bag for life? It's got to be. Because the flimsy ones have small holes in the bottom, don't they? No use.
I assume these are more like what you'd put your sandwich in rather than...
Don't put your sandwich in it.
I don't think Sainsbury's bags made it to the ISS or Challenger.
Do you get in the bag? Have the pee.
How would that help?
Because none of the pee is get in the bag. Someone holds it closed. You have your wee quickly. Then you just get out of the bag.
You're covered in piss. It doesn't make sense.
The bag on the penis. This is for men.
Uh-huh.
Couple of crocodile clips. Hold it in place.
Good. Very nice idea.
Now we're thinking like astronauts.
Now we are. astronauts that did not make the cut. No, what you would do is you would put socks in and you would put underwear in so that the liquid would instantly soak into something. So they were losing their socks. They were losing all of the clothing for 6 days while they're up there. But they made it back safe. So all good.
Great.
Here's one from Lauren Kramer. In spite of being completely landlocked and because of its man-made lakes and reservoirs, Oklahoma has more shoreline than the east and west coast of the contiguous states combined. It also has an international port because the river connects to the Mississippi.
Wait, Oklahoma has more
shoreline
than the east and west coasts of America?
That's what they're saying.
But isn't Oklahoma part of the contiguous east
and west?
Yeah,
but they don't have a Pacific or Atlantic coastline. So it's saying that the shoreline in Oklahoma is more than the Pacific and the Atlantic combined.
What?
Wow.
How can that be?
Have you run the math?
Well, I've looked into it and I think probably it's not true, unfortunately, because if you just take Alaska, the shoreline of Alaska is 33,904 miles. And according to the official bureau, Oklahoma has 55,646 miles of shoreline on its lakes. So if Alaska is like 60% of the total, probably once you add the eastern seaboard and
western seaboard,
yeah, then you're going to go above it. So I think it's probably not true, but it was difficult for me to find the exact figures.
Wait, did you say Oklahoma on its lakes?
On its lakes. So basically Oklahoma has a ton of lakes. And so they count as shoreline all the shores of the lakes.
Oh.
And it's like this thing that, you know, if you're a Sooner state person, like you would just know that as a fact you're told as a kid. But I think probably it's not quite true. Lauren also said that at high school she learned that Oklahoma has the world's largest salt flats, alabaster deposit, and parakeet farm. The largest salt flat is in Bolivia. The largest gypsum deposits are in Spain. And the parakeet farm closed in the 1950s after a fire. So I'm sorry, Lauren.
Lauren, you've experienced a rite of passage for anyone involved in QI or No Such Thing as Fish, which is called a thorough hearkening. And it's like, it's never a nice experience, but you do come out of it a wiser person.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not Lauren's fault. She was told this at school.
James, that's a thorough job. Because now, Lauren, you get to watch when James dishes out a hearkening to the next person and you can be like, yeah.
It's a club.
It is a club.
Every other human being is in that club.
Yeah.
Who's farming parakeets?
It was one person. It was one guy in Warika. Now, I might have mispronounced that, so Laura might write in and say I've mispronounced it. But they brought in just a few parakeets from abroad, and then parakeets have like 4 or 5 babies every year. And so by the 1950s, they had about 1,500 breeding pairs.
Wow.
But then there was a fire, and they never quite reached their former glory. And now if you go on the internet and you Google Oklahoma parakeets, you see Oklahoma was once the parakeet capital of the world, and no one knows why. Well, that's why.
But now we know. Yeah. I've got one, which I think is true, from Tracy Theakston. A common British job used to be operating a Shake Willy machine.
That's in the ISS once you've finished. Take off the crocodile clips, shake your willy.
Get out of that bag.
This is so good. So you know the word shoddy.
Yeah.
Dodgy. Shoddy is dodgy.
Yeah, low quality.
Yeah. It was like a kind of old cloth or something shoddy, wasn't it?
That's
like
what it's about. So stuff. I don't know if it's a word that's travelled outside the UK. I don't know if in America or Australia you say, it's a bit of a shoddy job, isn't it?
No, yeah, you say shoddy.
Oh, do you? Okay. Well, there was this cloth, and it was a mix of ground-up rags and kind of virgin wool, and it was then woven into new cloth. Mm. And some of the makers started upping the amount of recycled material, and that led to like low-quality cloth. Because the new stuff was getting more expensive. So the word gained the meaning shoddy, low quality. Shoddy just used to mean, oh, this is shoddy. You know, just, oh, what a nice piece of shoddy cloth. Great. Mm. Anyway, one of the steps of making the shoddy cloths was to do the willying in a shake willy machine. What it meant was roughly cleaning the material to fluff it up and to remove any dirt.
Can you stop doing that with your hands while you tell us about it?
And there are these census records of williers, willy girls, willy men.
Do we know why it was called Willy? Is it because they got woolly?
Two theories. One is that there were willow baskets involved, and one is that it's a derivation of winnowing, where you're winnowing out the low quality stuff.
Right.
So you had to feed the wool into the shake willy, and that fluffed it up, and that got rid of the nips, which is the dust and the dirt. The second willying machine is called the teaser, which is teasing it apart.
So as far as I can tell, you do the fluffing and the shake willy, you get rid of the nips, put it through the teaser, and then finally add the lubricant. That's the process.
Did Kenneth Williams invent this job?
Imagine, what's your profession? I'm a willy man.
That's good. We were doing this recently with the Rachel Paris episode where we talked about extinct jobs.
Yeah, I must admit I had willying on my list.
Oh, yeah, did you?
But we never got around to it.
That's surely extinct. There's nobody willying these days.
No williers now, no.
There is a brilliant Yorkshire company called Inuyo.
What? Was that your Yorkshire accent?
No, it's what it's called, Inuyo, which is an abbreviation of "it is not over until it is over."
Oh.
But it's almost all vowels.
What's that to do with willying?
They're a recycling firm. It's about recycling cloth.
I got it.
Yeah, and shoddy was pioneered in Batley in Yorkshire by Benjamin Law, who founded a company called Shoddy Manufacturing, which is just lovely. Yeah. Right, who's next?
I'll go on. This was sent in to us by Jackie Gemmel. She writes, "The reason aeroplanes have round windows is because old planes used to have square ones, which created weak points, which caused metal fatigue." Mm, yeah. And metal fatigue failure would be where the window was weakened further by air pressure at high altitude. And supposedly a few crashes were off the back of this. And so they now, as we all know, have circular windows, and that is to distribute the pressure evenly.
Yeah, it's a strong, very strong shape, isn't it? A circle.
Yeah.
I think now the materials are strong enough that you could get any shape of window.
Could you have a plane that was all window?
Yeah, now you can.
Wow.
But people just wouldn't go for it.
I think I wouldn't either. I think I would not go for that. I would like a plane where you can see into the hold. So you look down, you're like, oh, there's my bag.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really great.
Oh, do you think? Yeah. I reckon you don't want to know what goes on in there. I always imagine some weird shit goes on in those holds.
Yeah, lots of willy shaking down there.
Well, like snakes on a plane kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to see snakes down there.
But a novelty glass bottom plane is a very interesting concept.
Yeah.
Like that is quite interesting to... I'm a terrified flyer, but even I think I might do that.
No.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a glass bottom boat?
I have.
They're great fun.
Thank you.
You didn't invent them.
And well done. And we should say Dan invented the glass bottom boat. And now he's going to do it again with the plane, apparently.
What about an aeroplane? You know those rides at theme parks where you're not in a carriage, you're sort of suspended by your shoulders?
Oh, the danglers.
Mm. You're a dangler. What about a Ryanair? Where it's a dangle all the way to Malaga.
Oh my goodness.
So the plane has a top but no bottom.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I'm thinking, you know, saves a bit of money on fuselage.
It's going to make serving the drinks very tricky. I'll say that. I guess the stewards are hanging upside down.
Why? I suppose they could winch themselves along.
Damn, because there's no bottom on the plane.
Why are they hanging upside down? Why are they not just attached the right way up like you are?
But they're all vampires.
Okay. I'm going to row back on that. They can be the right way up.
Now we're talking. Remember to not let Andy pitch our weird roller coaster plane
ride. It will be stressful when you're coming into land, though, because it'll feel like you have to run very, very fast at a certain point to slow the plane down.
It's a Flintstones plane.
It's a Flintstones plane.
Mark Logie writes, in the 1760s, Simon Harcourt, the first Earl Harcourt, demolished the village of Newnham Courtney, as well as Newnham House, in order to make room for his garden, and he rebuilt the entire village 1 mile to the northeast.
Wow.
To make room for his garden?
Yeah.
It feels to me like it's easier to move a garden than it is to demolish a village.
Yeah, but the thing is about rich people, they're not really bothered about what's easiest. They're more bothered about what's more convenient for them.
And what's affordable, like if that's just within your budget.
I think for Simon Harcourt, the first Earl Harcourt, everything was within budget.
All right, there you go.
And just rebuilt it correctly?
Yeah, so if you drive through that area now,
yeah.
So it's like basically from the M4 to the M40 up there, you can go through Newnham Courtney, and basically all the buildings look almost identical because he had to build them all at the same time for the people who he moved from that village.
Wow.
Well, it's good. Look, it's good that he rebuilt it. I'll say that. You know,
yeah.
I would be a bit annoyed if someone said, I'm going to move your house from my garden. But if you're putting it back.
What difference does it make if he moves everyone's, right?
Yeah, no difference.
I guess you're going to have a bit of time where the renovation's going on that's going to be quite inconvenient.
Yeah, oh, those jobs do stretch on, don't they? Especially if the builders would be quite busy because they've got to rebuild everyone's house.
Yeah.
What would have been great is if one family happened to have gone away on like a really long trip and everyone decided not to tell them what had happened. And they just go on as normal. I swear to God, we were closer to that house. Am I going nuts?
Something else about Newnham Courtney.
Yeah.
I was looking into famous residents. Mavis Lever, she was the person who broke the Italian Enigma Code, which allowed the Royal Navy to ambush the Italian fleet at the Battle of Matapan, which was quite decisive. And she also broke the Abwehr Enigma, which was one of the German enigmas. They had a few different codes that they used.
Right. Wow.
And that one, she solved it with her colleague Margaret Rock, which led to the great saying, "Give me a lever and rock and I can move the universe."
Bloody brilliant.
That's what one of her bosses said.
That's really good. Here's one. This is from Jude Cafruni. This is maybe the most stoner fact in the inbox over the last, you know what I mean? Like the sort of, whoa, like the sort of cosmically mind-blowing fact.
Let's hear it.
The T-Rex is closer to us in time than it is to the Stegosaurus. No, I really like this. I love dinosaur timing facts.
Yeah.
And this is that the T-Rex went extinct when they all did, about 6 million years ago, right?
Uh-huh.
But the T-Rex was actually quite new. It had only properly arrived in its final form at about 72 million years ago. And I got really sad reading that. And I thought, no, they had 6 million
years. That's a long time.
Such a long time. Like, I don't know what. I got a bit misty-eyed thinking, God, they were in their prime. They had so much to give.
They could have built their own HS2 in that time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. but when that happened, when T-Rex arrived 72 million years ago in the late Cretaceous, Stegosauruses had already been extinct for over 70 million years.
Mm.
So the Stegosaurus and the T-Rex are further apart than the T-Rex is from us.
Do you know that Sgt. Pepper's, the album, is closer to the modern day than it is to when Cleopatra was alive?
No way.
Whoa.
And that's a stone effect, isn't it?
Whoa.
Sounds like an impressive fact until you actually listen to it, doesn't
makes
it?
You think. It does make you think, though.
That was the thing with the name Jurassic Park that often gets said, is that half the dinosaurs in the movie
are Cretaceous.
Yeah, not
but
Jurassic.
It implies that the dinosaurs in the park would have been incredibly freaked out by each other. They would have, like, the T-Rex would have been looking at the Stegosaurus thinking, what is that?
Yes.
Whereas the humans, they would have been relatively calm about because we're closer in time to them. So they'd be like, oh, yeah, it's normal. You know what I mean?
It's an interesting point.
I don't think so.
Not an interesting point.
No.
I retract mine as well.
You can't retract your point just because to go along with James.
If you look now at an animal that was extinct 55 million years ago, and then you see an animal which hasn't been invented yet and will come in 20 million years, even though it's closer to you, which is going to be more surprising?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. I retract.
Yeah.
We're all agreeing my point was not interesting or good.
You've been hearkened.
Oh, God. Oh, it's tough. It's tough. But the T-Rex used to be the size of a Dalmatian.
When it started?
Ages ago. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But I think that's cool. 3 meters long and 30 kilos.
Was that a T-Rex or like another Tyrannosaur, like a related Tyrannosaur?
It was an ancestor. Uh-huh. It was what eventually turned into the T-Rex.
Because I wonder if a baby T-Rex, when it's born, is already bigger than that size.
I don't know. 3 meters is a big egg, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway, there you go.
Here's one. This is from Ron Layback. And Ron says that Case Western Reserve University, which is home of the famous physics study, the Michelson-Morley experiment, which disproved that the ether existed. Of looking at me like you know what that means.
Yep.
The theory was that the Earth was going through some kind of air or some kind of field, but actually it turned out that it's going through space, and these guys proved it. Anyway, this university, they test whether or not Galileo's theorem of gravity is true every Halloween by dropping 2 jumbo-sized pumpkins from the top of the auditorium building. And the idea is they could be different weights, but they should land at the same time.
Right.
And spoiler alert, gravity works and they are correct.
good to check every year, though.
You never know.
You never know.
It might change.
Yeah.
I think that is fun.
Scientists have to check these things. and it brought me onto pumpkins. Mm. I've done a bit of my own research on pumpkins. There's an old QI fact that 95% of pumpkins in the UK are not eaten because we basically buy them and turn them into jack-o'-lanterns and then throw them away. Mm. But actually, that is not true anymore. That fact is really, really old. But there was a 2024 survey that found about 37% of pumpkins are eaten.
Which is just what? Under the amount of urine currently sitting inside the ISS pee tank.
That's food for thought.
But it's...
Whoa! Sorry, this is my stone effect.
But it's still not enough. And there is a campaign run by Hubbub, which is a charity for the environment, and someone called Emily Gussin, who wrote something called Don't Waste Your Pumpkin, to try and get people to eat pumpkins. And they have like pumpkin recipes and just to raise awareness of not wasting food. Mm. And they claimed that they've almost halved pumpkin waste in the last year.
Wow.
So that's really good work for them. So if you're listening to this, it's 3 weeks after Halloween already.
But don't despair.
If you've still got a few pumpkins there, just scrape off the mold. Ooh. They might still be good.
Nice.
Can I just do one more thing?
Yeah, go on.
Because I have an extra one that we never got to.
Ooh.
And I did lots of extra research for it. So Federico Sanna wrote that if Tom and Jerry was made in ancient Rome, Tom, instead of being a cat, would have been a weasel. And that's because, according to Federico, the Romans had pet weasels instead of pet cats to get rid of mice and stuff.
Lovely.
I found a website called foundinantiquity.com, and they have a really, really long explanation of this, and they don't think it's true. They think that weasels were not used as pets. They were in the houses, but they were kind of a pest themselves. But the reason I wanted to say it is because they found on this website that this theory was first theorized in 1718 by Magnus Rydelius and Andreas E. Weasel. And they reckon that maybe he came up with this theory that they had pet weasels because his name was Mr. Weasel.
Amazing.
Sorry.
Amazing. Guys. Oh, Federico, you've been hearkened. That's good though. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think the jury's still slightly out, but
because they're in the house. I mean, that's a big animal to have in your house as a pest.
Yeah, but a lot of the sources, when they talk about these weasels, they talk about them in the same as you would say there is a fly in the house, or there's a mouse in the house, or a rat in the house. It's like an annoying thing.
Right. Are they basically like ferrets?
Well, they're smaller than ferrets. And the other thing is, ferrets actually are quite easy to tame. And like, I have a friend, Sid, who I don't know if he still has a pet ferret, but he definitely used to. I think John Mitchinson from QI used to have a pet ferret.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
But I think a weasel, they're just a little bit angry, and I think they don't make good pets.
Do we get them in the UK? I can't actually.
Oh, yeah.
Weasels, yeah, we
get weasels.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good fact, old QI facts, most weasels in the UK are least weasels, because there's a species called the least weasel, which is the most common one in the UK.
That's lovely. I think we had a fact in the inbox, someone saying, oh, sorry, I don't remember the correspondent now, but the least weasel is currently rated as least concern, which very is nice, because their population's kind of doing all right.
Yeah.
My old neighbour used to take a ferret for a walk on a lead,
okay,
as a pet, which is a cool thing to do. I think it's cool.
Yes,
yes,
you do.
Okay. Let's end it there. Let's go to inaugurating the latest members of the Friend of the Podcast Hall of Fame.
Exciting.
Anyone who has signed up to Clubfish at the Friend of the Podcast tier gets one of our headline facts in perpetuity. You are then the sponsor, patron, whatever you like, of that fact, and you get a little shout out on this show. That's what we're trying to say here. So we should do some shout outs. Guys, we've had a bit of a rush on membership of Friend of the Podcast, so we are going to up the pace and of the number of shout outs we give per show and get through a few more.
Great.
So we're sorry we may not get to some of you for a little while, but your names are in the system, and we're going to try really hard to get through them. There's been a swell.
You know those companies when you ring them and they say, sorry, we're having an unexpected large number of calls, but they say it absolutely every single day.
Yeah.
We're going to have that.
I'm afraid we've experienced unprecedented demand.
Yeah.
And we're going to be dealing with it in a precedented way.
Yeah.
So
your fact will be dealt with in around 7 months.
It'll be before then, we hope.
It'll be before then, we hope. Let's do some. Right. Today, shout out number one goes to Orion Slater.
Brilliant.
What a terrific name. Orion.
3 stars.
Lovely. Lovely. Orion must be absolutely sick of that joke. belt up. There we go.
Very good.
Anyway, Orion, your fact is that the earliest known dentistry is 9,000 years old.
Yes.
Now, the exciting thing about this fact is it's not one of our facts, or even one of Anna's.
That's right.
It's Greg Jenner's.
Historian Greg Jenner. And this was our third episode.
Yeah.
And Greg Jenner and comedian Alex Edelman were sitting there with me and James for this episode. So
where was I?
I think you didn't really care about the show at that point. You're sort of a bit loosey-goosey.
I've maintained that.
No, you were
in
busy.
In those days, yeah, we did two in one day, actually. Do you remember? And we got Greg and Alex to come in and do a show. And then as soon as we finished, as soon as the mics went off, they came back on again and we did a show with the four of us.
That's right. They basically came in to have a cup of tea. And yeah. James and I said, why don't we just make an episode instead while they're here? So yeah, well done to Orion Slater.
Great fact. Ancient dentistry. Let's have another.
Okay, well, this one is going to Christine and Tom Asbridge. And the fact is that according to Dr. Hans Ulrich, the Middle Ages never happened. This is a wild theory called Phantom Time Hypothesis. Largely put into the show because we knew that Greg would be horrified he was sitting on a show that was discussing this particular thing.
It was just to upset him, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, in a friendly way. We did like him. But that was the idea, yeah.
And the exciting thing about that one is that this is a special medieval fact requested by Christine for Tom, who is a medieval historian and writer. So we're not going to say you can request your facts if you're a friend of the podcast, but you can put a little note in. You know, like where you put, I'm allergic to nuts or something.
Yeah.
When you.
But as the guy who does the emails, I'd like to specify that as the chef in this restaurant, I may put nuts in anyway.
That's absolutely. While Andy's replied to your emails, he may be touching nuts.
God.
So let's go to the next one, which was, the fact is the most medically indispensable sea creature in the United States is the horseshoe crab. And that was originally a fact from Alex Edelman.
Lovely.
A good friend.
It's like he's in the room.
But now it is under the custodianship of Anna, also known as Anna MC, Anna Mack. She's a regular contributor to various emails and stuff like that.
Yeah. She? Congratulations, Anna. Yeah. And I like that. I do like the fact the most medically indispensable sea creature in the United States. Like, it's qualifier city, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Alex had just read a documentary or watched a documentary about the horseshoe crab and just wanted to talk about that.
I love the idea of reading a documentary. It feels like it's the kind of thing you would do, James, where you print out the transcript of the documentary and then you read it because you'll do it faster and there won't be irritating pictures in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a friend who reads all of our podcasts. Doesn't listen to them. Reads them.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you read
scripts of Toy Story.
All four of them. Never seen the films.
Did you cry at the right bits?
Yeah. Just dripped on the printout. Couldn't read the next bit.
Oh, dear. Right, let's have another fact. This one is going to 00 Dynames. Dynames? It's a terrific name. And it's that Queen Elizabeth slept in a bedroom with 28 women. So congratulations, 00.
She's the Bonnie Blue of her time.
That's rude.
Is it? I'm going to pretend that I don't know who that is.
Me too. Oh, me too.
I think that was the vibe we were going for, to try and do a bit of innuendo. But actually, this was the fact that she had lots of handmaids and stuff who used to sit and sleep in her bedroom.
Yeah, they'd watch her give birth as well.
Queen Elizabeth I. Did, wow.
No.
You have changed history, Dan. That's huge.
Sorry. I was thinking about the chambermaids who would stay and births in those periods were Absolutely. Often viewed by huge parties.
So for Queen Elizabeth I, nicknamed the Virgin Queen, I think probably that wouldn't have been a big part of the job spec.
Not the nickname of Bonnie Blue.
Okay, well, I don't know who that is. Right, carry on.
So the next one, I'll do this one. It's that 30 million Chinese people live in caves. And that fact is now under the custodianship of Nathan Morgan.
Congratulations, Nathan. Feels like a fact that will have undergone some depreciation.
Yeah, I think it was a fact of its time.
Or it could have been an appreciation because the population's gone up a long way in the last 11 years.
Yeah.
What, of China?
Oh, yeah.
I suppose it has.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like the housing boom in China might have
There's lots of rural bits of China that
there are,
quite had that.
Yeah. Increasingly more people live in these mega cities, don't they?
Yeah.
It's interesting that we can now say, we've been going so long that we can talk about our old facts and say, wow, that was a different time.
Yeah.
And it's us we're talking about.
Well, it's weird. If you listen back to that episode, you'd probably hear yourself saying stuff where you're going, what am I talking about? I don't know that. When did I say that?
Oh, I mean, that happens with every episode bar the last three.
Yeah.
Like, right. I just, like, who's this guy? Yeah. He sounds handsome. Then,
are you one of those people who always gets me and you mixed up?
I am.
Voices.
Every time I look in the mirror, I'm shocked not have your face.
Shall I do one?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, Alex Tevsky. You have just become the custodian of this fact from James Harkin. There is a banker in Latvia who will lend you money using your immortal soul as security.
That's great.
Is he still going?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you why I did this fact, because our first ever listener was Gattis, who is who was the advertising partner of my wife. And I sent him the episode to see what he thought about it. And that was before it went online or anything. And he is from Latvia, so I thought we'd do a little Latvian fact quite early on.
That's so cool.
That is cool. Yeah.
Our first listener. That's great.
I think he is.
Well, that's a great fact. Congratulations, Alex. I'll do another one. This is another Anna. Anna, your fact forever is that for 100 years, almost all maps of Africa contained a fictional mountain range called the Mountains of Kong.
So to clarify, that was a fact that was said by Anna.
Yes.
But it's now under the custodianship of...
another Anna.
Whose surname we don't know. She's just Anna.
Exactly. Unless Anna...
Tyszynski.
Our Anna has signed up to be a friend of the podcast.
Not a chance.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't listen to the main show, let alone whatever we're doing now.
She doesn't know this exists.
No. I spoke to her last weekend and she says she has been listening to the episodes and really enjoying them.
Oh.
Okay, so Anna's been replaced.
Yeah.
Motherhood has done a really weird thing to her second time round.
She did look very tired.
That's a great fact. I think that's a really fun fact, the Mountains of Kong. There's just this huge mountain range. Everyone said, well, you can't go that way. What about the Mountains of Kong? And they just weren't there.
That one feels weirdly like an OG classic of fish.
Absolutely.
Here is one more for this week. So male Pennsylvania grass spiders are much likelier to approach a female who has already killed and eaten a male. That feels like an Anna fact, doesn't it? It was one of yours, Andy, but now it is under the custodianship of Alva Clausen.
Well done, Alva. It's a good fact. Male Pennsylvania grass spiders are much likelier to approach a female who has already killed and eaten a male.
Which is crazy, right? Because she's got form.
But she's full. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
The killer wouldn't possibly want to kill again.
No, that's what they say about serial killers, isn't it? Yeah. Once you've killed once, it's not at all Moorish.
You bump into, oh God, no, don't worry, I already did one tonight. I am, woo, just want to hang.
Yeah, great. Well, there you go. That is this week's batch of Fact Custodians. Thank you so much to all of you who've signed up at, frankly, any tier of Clubfish. It's a joy to have you on board. We will be back again in another week's time with another little fish. We'll be back in less time than that with another main episode of the show. And for members of Clubfish, we'll be back in an indeterminate amount of time with a drop as a line, our audience feedback show. Clear?
Clear.
Great. Bye.